Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker Studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
On Tuesday, December 6th, Tuesday, January 6th, welcome to the program. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And yes. I'm Avi Wolfman Arendt.
It is 2026.
Time flies. Whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever.
And you know what? January 6th.
You know what? Wipe that away because I'm going to start the show by giving you your flowers. Giving you some props, Cherry Gregg.
Oh, okay.
Because people don't know this. You're on a New Year's resolution winning streak.
I am. Yes.
So last year your resolution was...
Give up bottled water.
Give up bottled water. Mm-hmm. And indeed you did.
I did.
And you've been carrying or lugging around this big old cup ever since. Before that, what was it?
Start a garden.
Do you have a garden?
I do.
Indeed, you do.
2 years in a row, I did it.
So today, we have a couple experts in to talk about how to set and keep New Year's resolutions. But really, we have three experts because Cherry Gregg might
be
dishing out advice at this point about how to set and keep New Year's resolutions. Of course, we want to hear from you. And there's a whole science to this, by the way. There's a science of change. We're going to get into all that. And we want to hear from you. Share your goal for the new year and, if you dare, your plan to make it stick. The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. If you're on YouTube or Facebook, drop a comment in the chat.
And I'll say a quick shout out because you have to have supportive people who remind
you.
Yeah,
yes, yes.
You know, and you've been a support for the water thing. Believe it or not, Avi has his little metal water container.
Yeah, I got mine right here.
Carries the entire Studio 2 team is on board. Yeah. So, you know, just having people who kind of like support you in whatever you're
doing. And it's a chain of support because
yeah.
I have this because of my wife. She encouraged me to get this and like found this very nice bottle and everything like that. So it's a chain of support.
Yep. And it definitely helps you stick to it. So
take a drink right now.
Yeah, take a sip. Take a sip. We're going to sip. Mm-hmm.
All right. So now that our throats are clear and our minds are clear, we do have to get into some serious business, which is our trio of local news stories. Cherry, start us off.
Yes. A new lawsuit alleges that negligence is behind the tragic nursing home explosion and fire in Bristol Township that killed three people and injured about 20 others. The suit was filed on behalf of four survivors of that explosion against Sabre Healthcare Group, PICO, and several others. The suit alleges that the defendants failed to adequately respond to and deal with a gas leak at Bristol Health and Rehab Center and neglected to evacuate the building. Now, according to the Philadelphia Inquirer, survivors were caught smelling gas in the days leading up to that explosion and on the morning of December 23rd when it happened. They said they reported it to staff at this 174-bed facility, but no one seemed concerned or asked them to evacuate. One survivor, an amputee in a wheelchair, reportedly complained that he could still smell the gas. He told three different people around 1:30 p.m. that day. They told him it was a residual smell from the gas leak because PICO had been on site to fix the leak. A little over 30 minutes later, around 2:15, that explosion happened. And you got to remember, Avi, this is a facility where people were in wheelchairs. You had people who were blind. You had people nursing all sorts of injuries. So an evacuation process would have been, you know, labor intensive, trying to get everybody removed. And so that's why you had so many injuries. And it's such a tragedy. By the way, PICO hasn't commented yet, citing an ongoing investigation. Sabre also hasn't yet commented. By the way, they took over the facility just a few weeks before this explosion,
which is incredible. And there's a broader infrastructure issue here, which is that, you know, PICO has, by its own acknowledgement, over 700 miles of substandard gas lines that need to be replaced. That only accounts for about 5% of PICO's gas service, but 80% of its leaks. They have a timeline until 2035 to get that patched up. But, you know, infrastructure is often behind these tragedies, or poor infrastructure or lack of infrastructure.
Yeah. So sorry, you know, praying for the families affected by this tragic situation.
Going to story number two now. Since the overturning of Roe versus Wade by the U.S. Supreme Court in 2022, the number of abortions in New Jersey has steadily risen. That's according to a new report from the Society of Family Planning, covered by the New Jersey Monitor. Shout out to them. Abortions rose 8% in New Jersey from 2023 to 2024. They appear set to rise again once all data is tabulated for 2025. It is possible these numbers reflect a jump in patients coming from out of state to have procedures in New Jersey. The Dobbs decision resulted in over a dozen states outlawing abortion, with others enforcing major restrictions. New Jersey is among the states that went the other way and solidified access to abortion in state law. And so that's one possible explanation for why the numbers are going up in New Jersey.
Well, to me, it just goes to show, like, you know, people, if people really want to do this, they're going to find a way. This was very surprising to me when I saw that those numbers had jumped up. I wonder what the numbers in other states where it is still legal. And I know that it's been codified in New Jersey and the Constitution that you have this right. So interesting. And, you know, we'll be following.
And what you don't know from this data is who is getting abortion. And have those demographics somehow shifted since Dobbs? I will point that this same study found that nationally, mm-hmm. The number of abortions per month has gone up since 2022. So it's not just, or at least the numbers overall are not necessarily being dragged down by the states that restrict it. The numbers overall are continuing to go up. So that's something, I think it's a trend worth monitoring going forward. This was, you know, an overturning of precedent. Mm-hmm. We really
50 years of
right exactly
yeah.
And so the society, the pre-Roe society, is mm-hmm. very hard to compare to the post-Dobbs society, so we really didn't know how this was going to go, and we're starting to see some data now that gives us some indication of what the trend lines might be moving forward.
So interesting. On a lighter note,
story number three, Cherry.
Yes, there is a restaurant in Philadelphia that, guess what, allows diners to pay whatever they want. You heard me right. This
get
restaurant,
out of here.
It is in East Kensington. It's called Post Haste. And owner chef Ari Miller says he's not doing it to give away free food. Oh, no. Instead, he wants to make fine dining more accessible, and he wants to facilitate community connection. That's according to this story in Philly Voice. He says it's basically an expansion of the tipping concept, where people sort of tip based on how they feel, and he wants the diners there to do the same. But let me explain how it works.
Yes, it's not like you go
any day. No. The pay as you want only works on Sundays from 3 to 9, and only on food, not drinks. So you get to order what you want, and when the check comes, the food items are zeroed out, and you basically pay however much you're comfortable with. And I know, Abby, we were talking about this.
Yeah.
Would you have the guts to just pay zero?
I would not have the guts. I mean, this is a great, like, psychological test.
Yeah.
Because, first of all, I wouldn't get any drinks. I don't drink very much. So mm-hmm. I would just get food. The bill would come to me. It would say zero. Would I actually
just get up and say peace out and
leave?
Yeah,
exactly. It's sort of, you have to have a lack of guilt, really, to pay $0.
Mm-hmm.
I fear what I would do is I might pay just as much, if not more, out of, like, appreciation and over guilt, which, you know, that's what happens with these companies, right, that give unlimited vacation days. It ends up people take less. Exactly.
Vacation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. Now, I do think there's a type of person that would be able to very easily take advantage of this.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps that person will show up very frequently on Sundays at Post Haste. But for me personally, it would be very difficult to pay $0.
And you know what's interesting is this is my neighborhood. I live in East Kensington.
Yeah.
And I would probably go to this restaurant. Their menu looks really cool. It's a farm to table restaurant.
No, their menu.
Just because I'm hearing about it, I would go. And I kind of like the concept. And it works. I mean, research has shown that when people are able to set their own prices, almost everyone pays something. And sometimes they pay well over the suggested price.
Look at you with the research.
You know,
bang.
You know what I mean?
I will say, I was imagining when I saw the story that this was going to be, you know, like hipster bar food or something
No, it's decent.
But do you see what was on the menu?
Uh-huh.
Goose and foie gras sausage plate. I mean, they got this linguine mussels, mushroom gnocchi. I was like, this is like giving that away for $0 is but no joke.
But I think when you're wowed by something, if somebody gives you something really nice, you almost are like, I cannot take this without
absolutely
paying you.
Well, you
like,
know what
this
it is?
Isn't right.
You know what it reminds me of too is like sometimes if you go to a really nice restaurant, mm-hmm. they'll just give you something for free. Oh, the chef wanted you to have this. All of a sudden, you're tipping out the wazoo.
Yeah,
because you're like, oh, the chef was so nice to me. They gave me that extra dessert or that little special plate that wasn't even on the menu for
they
free.
They set the vibe. They set the energy for it. And this looks like a nice spot. And
so
I mean,
is this charity or manipulation? That's really the question. No, it's charity. No. Chef Ari Miller, we would never accuse you of that. You seem like a wonderful person. Thank you for doing this, by the way. I would like to go to Post Haste.
I think so, too. I would totally go there.
We should Post Haste get to our next conversation, which is all about setting goals.
And sticking to them, okay? Yes. And achieving them.
Our goal is to give you the phone number right now, 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. We want to hear about your New Year's resolution and how you plan to make it stick. Hey, stick with us. This is Studio 2 on WHYY.
Welcome back to Studio 2 here on WHYY. I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman Arendt. Every January, we make big promises to ourselves. Live healthier, drink less, exercise more, reconnect with friends and family. All of them great ideas in theory, but why do so many New Year's resolutions fade by February?
And so, Avi, I'm going to pause you right there.
Pause me?
Yes, because before we get into this whole discussion about how to become a better version of ourselves, I am curious.
Uh-huh.
Have you created a New Year's resolution, and what is it?
Yeah, I am resolving to sabotage more live on-air segments by not participating in them.
Oh, you, no. No.
Okay. No, something exercise related. I do want to do more exercise. Okay. I have not formulated a specific goal yet. I am in the process of attempting to find a severely marked down exercise bike. So that's step one. You, okay. What do you got?
Well, I've been a weekend warrior when it comes to exercise. So I go hard Saturday and Sunday. Okay, but
yes.
My goal is to work in at least one day during the week because I want to do 4 days a week, but I would like
we're both doing exercise.
Yeah, I want to add like a 30 minutes at least 1 to 2 days a week during
the
week.
I like that. See, I like the specificity. I need to get there. So then now we've established our very ambitious goals.
See, there you go.
That we're totally going to stick with this year. Wink, wink. Let's hear from some folks who actually know how to set goals mm-hmm. and how we can use them for long-lasting change.
Yes, and joining us to discuss all of this with two different perspectives are Katie Milkman, professor of the Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania and co-director of the Behavior Change for Good Initiative. She's also the author of How to Change, the Science of Getting from Where You Are to Where You Want to Be. Katie, welcome to Studio 2.
Thanks so much for having me.
And we also have George James, CEO of George Talks, a licensed therapist and author of the brand new book, I Give Myself Permission.
George,
thanks for being here.
Yeah, George, great to have you.
Glad to be here.
And our question for all of you this hour, it's more of a request, really. Share your goal for the new year and your plan to make it stick. Mm-hmm. For instance, Maura on YouTube says, my only resolution this year is to get weirder and hotter. Okay, so Maura starting us off on a nice note there. If you're on YouTube or Facebook, drop a comment in the chat. The number is 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org.
And so, Katie, I wanted to kind of start with you because every year, 40% of Americans, we sort of make these promises to ourselves and then we kind of fall off. So why do we do this? Why do we put ourselves through this every single year? And why do so many, like 80% of us fail?
Let me start with the question of why we do it, and then I'll talk a little bit about a failure. But I think actually why we do it is fascinating. It's something I've studied with others in research on what we call the fresh start effect. And it turns out that New Year's is actually just one of many moments in our lives where we have this sense of a new beginning and a chapter break in our personal story that motivates us to try to tackle something new and make a change. And of course, now it's baked into our culture. We have radio shows where we're talking about New Year's resolutions.
Yes.
Your friends are asking you.
Yes.
Right? So there's more to it. But actually, every Monday, you see upticks in goal pursuit because those are miniature chapter breaks. Birthdays do it too. So the psychology is that at these chapter breaks, we have a sense of a new beginning, a clean slate. We can say the old me is gone, the new me is here. We also tend to step back and think big picture. And those phenomena lead us to set an extra large number of goals at this time of year. Plus, again, all this sort of social pressure that's been added on by our current culture. Why do they fail is a separate question. And I think the best short answer for that is that all we get from these chapter breaks is very brief increase in motivation rather than something that will carry us forever. Yeah. It's a short moment. It's a short window where we're extra motivated. So what's great to do then is to use sort of all the best practices from science to set yourself up for success rather than just assuming that this motivation you feel today to work out four times a week will last throughout the year and keep you going. And, you know, gym memberships spike every January, but in February they're empty because that motivation is gone. You need something to hook that goal to so that you'll keep going. And I know we'll talk about that more in the next.
Yeah. Much more to come on that. Stay tuned. But I am curious, like, so we're talking about the fresh start effect in terms of setting goals, New Year's resolutions, but it could apply more broadly, George. And I'm curious, like, do you feel like clients, for instance, are more receptive to advice or change during the new year, or the beginning of the month, or certain mile markers? Like, do people feel different to you when you're conversing with them at the start of the year?
I wish. I mean, I feel like I should start a Monday practice after. Yeah, like, yeah. Feel like every Monday I'm going to be the best therapist because people will listen. But I do think that some people want to change or want to be better, and they are more receptive of saying, hey, I'm going to do the work. Because that's really what therapy is. It doesn't really matter what I say, per se, but it matters what people are willing to do after the session, and they might be more open around this time or around a birthday or a significant change in their life.
Yeah, but that's an interesting point, too, is like maybe this is oversimplification, but I just feel like there's a group of people who are really desire self-improvement. It's almost like baked into their DNA. Then there's another group of people that maybe are more tend towards settling or sort of like accepting things as they are. I'm not saying one's better than the other, but do you find that people kind of fall into one of those two camps? Is it a spectrum? Like, where are people on the sort of intrinsic self-improvement scale, do you find?
Yeah, I think a lot of that goes to like our culture, right? This thought of like, we have to be better. We have to be the most improved version of ourselves.
Right.
Right. So there's that part. And then there's the other part of recognizing I'm not my best. I'm not doing or saying or living the life I want to be. So I do think that people fall into the category of I want to be my best self internally. And then there's some folks that say, I don't know if I can be my best self, and so I settle. And I think that's where a lot of my work comes in, where I'm trying to help people to believe you don't have to be the best, but you can maybe be a little bit better than where you are.
Yeah, you get people out of that stuck mindset. By the way, LookaBear88 on YouTube says, my intention for this year is, quote, living in my best body. That means exercising more, getting outside for mental health, talking with my therapist more often, eating more green things. LookaBear88, I hope you do all those things. Katie Milkman, I mean, there's people who put these lists together. I mean, and I was talking about my personal, resolutions. I typically just go with one thing just because. And I have momentum because if I pick one thing, I get that one thing done and it comes with me. But if I do more than one thing, it doesn't tend to work. Is there a magic number? Like, how should you be thinking about, you know, this? Because the resolution here was living in my best body. Like, how should you sort of think about it if you writing it down and putting it on a board? Like, how should you even word it to yourself for best outcome?
That's a great question. Yeah. It's a great question. Ideally, you want a goal that's measurable, that stretches you. So being, living in my best body or being my best self is a little vague. Ideally, it'd be more something like, I want to be ready to run a half marathon by this date, or I want to make it to the gym four times a week, which was the goal that you stated. So ideally, it's something that is specifically measurable about your body, and then you can start making that plan to break down, okay, how are you going to get to that measurable goal? It should be a stretch, so it shouldn't be something that you're already doing, right? 2,000 steps a day for most of us is happening passively, and if that's your goal, you're not stretching yourself and you're not taking advantage of the best science that says, make it 10-20% harder than what you're already doing. So it's achievable, but it isn't just, like I rolled out of bed and it happened.
Yeah, actually, on that point of making things measurable, I want to read this interesting comment from Edie, who says, I don't make New Year's resolutions.
Okay.
I do what I call re solutions, which are more mindset changes. As a recovering workaholic, my most important one is slowing down and simply being and not doing as much. And I am curious why, Katie, it's beneficial to take sort of a vaguer goal and turn it into a more concrete goal. Like, what is it about our brains that makes it so setting a more concrete goal makes us more likely to get to the bigger feeling or bigger change that we are seeking?
Yeah, there are a few things that are helpful about it, about that concreteness. One is that it's more transparent to you whether you're making progress. You can actually see whether or not you're, if it's four times a week, again, to go back to that example of going to the gym, like, you know, oh, I checked off day one, I checked off day two. You can see that progress, and that experiencing the progress builds momentum. And that's really hard to do with something that's not measurable, that's vague, to see the progress and to feel the positive reinforcement and have that cycle perpetuated. So that's a big part of it. And also just making plans is critical to success. It sounds so boring, but it's so important, right? We know if you're going to remodel your house, you have to have a plan. Like, when are you gonna hire the contractor? When is somebody gonna come do the kitchen? Like, when do the tiles go in? All these little pieces that you have to lay out, that's critically important, not only to doing those kinds of big projects at work or home renovations, but also to self-renovations. And you can't really plan those details if you don't have a concrete objective that you're working towards.
Yeah, I like that. And by the way, I wanna remind our listeners, we'd love for you to participate. Our goal, of course, is for you to share your goal for the new year and your plan to stick to it. We'd love to hear what you have to say. The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, keep those comments coming in the chat. Judy on YouTube says you can combine two resolutions, reading and better sleep. Usually if you read in bed at a point, you lose focus, close the book, and go to sleep. Yeah, Judy, I like that.
Been there.
Yeah, done that as well. And so, George, you know, this New Year's is a good time to try to get unstuck. You know, maybe, you know, you don't really know what the resolution should be because, you know, you just know that you just kind of feel like something needs to change. How do you sort of work with people emotionally to sort of get to a place where Katie's talking about, where you can even come to, you know, have a concrete idea and a plan to actually get yourself there?
Yeah, to your point, you know, a lot of people are stuck. And what I think happens is that people just come up with this goal, but they don't really talk about what will get them there. What is their mindset? What are their emotions? What are they feeling? Because when you're in day three of your goal and now you start to feel, I'm not smart, I'm not capable, that's the part that you really need to work with. What is internal that is driving you or pulling you away from that goal? And that's where a lot of people are stuck. And they don't take the time or energy to dig deep to say, well, I didn't see it in my family, or I don't know if I'm really capable of doing it. I failed in school at this part, so maybe I'll fail at this goal. Those thoughts, those emotions drive our ability or inability to follow through with these resolutions.
Yeah, because when at the start of the show, we talked about how 80% of the people don't stick with their resolutions. And so we're going to talk about some of the ways you can sort of stick to it. But how do you even get your mindset to say, you know what, like, I'm going to get past February. Like, I'm not going to, because people already, people made those resolutions. It's January 6th and some people already fell off.
Look, Peloton has a 100-day challenge and I was 3 days into it. I'm like, I don't know about day four. Yeah. Right. Like, so there's this thought of like, okay, what are we going to do to continue going through it? And I think like a lot of us just need also to be able to say, it's okay if we falter. It's okay if we fall off. It's okay if we're not perfect. I think a lot of us are trying to feel like I have to have this goal and I have to be perfect and I have to do everything right. And that pressure becomes overwhelming. Mm.
Yeah. Let me read this comment from Allison, who says, my goal this year is to paint every Saturday.
I like that one.
One of the ways I prepare for this is by slowly preparing my paints over the week, such as bringing out my canvas on my easel, picking a picture, and so on. Breaking large tasks into small steps really helps build momentum.
I like
and
that.
And Katie, from what I understand, I think the research does back this up, the sort of mini goals within the goal. What's, first of all, is that true? Is that a successful strategy? And if so, what's a good way to create the smaller steps to the bigger step?
Yeah, it is successful. One of my favorite projects I got to do actually was led by a UMaryland professor named Anish Rai, where we worked with Crisis Text Line, They are a volunteer-based organization that helps people who are in mental health crises, and they need their volunteers to stick to a commitment that they make each year after being trained to 200 hours of yearly volunteering. We did an experiment where we either reminded them that that means a little bit of work every week to get to 200 hours, or we were really more specific. We said that's 4 hours weekly. And by the way, these are really, it's the same thing if we're reminding you it's 200 hour yearly commitment, because you can do the math. What is that weekly? It's 4 hours a week. But when we reminded people it's 4 hours weekly, we saw about a 10% increase in volunteering. Being precise about that bite size, approachable goal made it easier for people to see what they needed to do. And this has also been shown in financial decision making. People are more motivated and likely to sign up to save $5 a day than $150 a month, even though those amount to the same thing. So when we can make it concrete and bite size, we see better results.
Well, because it doesn't seem as overwhelming if you have a smaller thing to do. So do you have to trick yourself sometimes? Have you had to see your clients, George, sort of have to trick themselves the way Katie's talking about to sort of like accept? Because that's a trick, right? $150 a month is still $5 a day. I mean, but some reason $5 seems more palatable than $150.
It is, because a lot of it is getting our minds and our emotions in line, right? If I'm doing $5 a day, I can build up that momentum faster, right? I can build up the ability to say, I can do this, I can achieve it. And so, yeah, sometimes we do need those tricks, those hacks into something. And a lot of times, I know we'll talk about this, is also where is your support, your accountability? Because that also helps. When I talked about the 100-day challenge, it seemed my wife go for day five. Then I'm like, all right, I guess I got to do it too.
Yeah. Well, and that comes to a broader point, I think, about whether or not you should share your goals out loud and whether you should try to complete them with other people. I'm curious what the research says about both of those things, Katie. So the first being like, Do I say it out loud, which, you know, risks some embarrassment and some, you know, people might feel self-conscious about that. And also, like, should I attempt to do this with another person who's trying to do the same thing, the sort of co-accountability dynamic? Give us some sense there, Katie.
Well, let me start with the co-accountability, because we actually did some research on this a couple of years ago and have a really fun result. So we did an experiment where people who wanted to exercise signed up with a friend, and we randomly assigned them to either get paid every time they came to the gym, whether or not they showed up with their friend, or they could only earn that cash if they showed up within 30 minutes of their friend. So we made it harder to get the money if you're doing this in cooperation with someone else. And yet that actually led to 35% more exercise, which is pretty amazing. Wow. So this is work led by Rachel Gershon at UC Berkeley. And I think it's one of the most interesting results we have in the goal setting literature, because it flies in the face of we want to make goals simple and not complex. And
yet you added friction. You added friction to the task, but because the power of the sort of group dynamic was so great, it still led to more uptake. Am I understanding that correctly?
That's exactly right. It's harder to achieve this goal. And by the way, the people being paid to go to the gym whenever they show up, they have the right to coordinate and show up with their friend, but they don't have the insight that this is going to be a thing that motivates them. And that it is indeed, when we break down, you know, what was driving the difference, there's two components. One is the accountability. You don't want to let your friend down and have them not earn their bonus by not showing up for them. But the second part, and we haven't talked about this yet, and I think it's important too when we think about making goals social, is that it's more fun when you work out with a friend. And one of the most critical predictors of success at our goals is if we found a way to enjoy them and the process of completing them. If it's miserable to show up day in and day out, whether it's to the gym or to your, you know, canvas to complete that painting project on Saturdays, then we are very much more likely to quit than if we find a way to make it enjoyable to pursue our goals.
And on that point of making things more enjoyable, I know you've done research about this idea of temptation bundling, which is you'll explain it more fully, but my understanding is like, give yourself a little treat that is attached to completing the task. So you do something that I have done in the past, I think, which is like, if you're going to exercise, it's your chance to watch X TV show or listen to X podcast. It could be something like, well, if I do some exercise, I get to have a little mini dessert or something like that afterwards. I don't know exactly how it works, but can you explain temptation bundling and what sort of like good versions of it? And maybe are there bad versions of it too?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So you nailed it on my own personal use of it. I use it for exercise this morning. Yesterday morning, you know, I hop on the elliptical, and that's the only time I'm allowed to watch my Netflix. Currently, I'm watching The Morning Show. I guess right. that's Apple TV. But anyway, that's
one.
Great.
It's one of those streaming services. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One of these things. Whichever one floats your boat. The idea is that it's some temptation that you're really looking forward to. Yeah. You only get to enjoy it while you're pursuing a goal. And so that changes the experience. Instead of it feeling like a chore, something you dread, you start looking forward to it. You crave it. You want to find out, in this case, what happens to your favorite characters. It also distracts you. So for instance, while I'm exercising, I'm not paying attention to the pain of the workout. I'm just engrossed in what's happening to my favorite characters. And I also have the added bonus of not feeling guilty about watching TV and wasting time because I'm actually doing something productive. We've studied it and shown that when we give people ways to temptation bundle or even teach them the insight, it can boost their exercise. There's some research showing it can help kids do better in school when teachers, add things to classrooms like music and snacks and, colored markers for doing their math homework, kids persist longer. But I think what's important is you can really use it in a lot of parts of your life. So if you have some sort of household chore that you are dreading, think about, you only get to listen to your favorite podcast or favorite music station while you're folding laundry or cleaning the bathroom. Maybe it's cooking fresh meals for your family and you save a special bottle of wine. You only get to open that while you're engaging in that cooking process. So there's lots of ways you can do it. My students, right, only pick up that Frappuccino you're craving from Starbucks on the way to hit the books at the library. And it does work best when there's simultaneity. So you mentioned self-reward, right? Like after I work out, then I get the chocolate donut. First of all, that could be self-defeating.
I was about to say,
exactly. Yeah. I get it. I get
all
it.
That running,
I get
and now it. You're going to eat the chocolate. Yeah.
right. So make sure you're not like defeating the purpose of whatever the goal was by countering it with some treat. And then second of all, it really does work better with the simultaneity because if you have to wait, the reason this works is because the way our mind is wired, we care about instant gratification.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And anything that requires delay, we really value less. And that includes like an hour delay, right? Like the donut that's after the workout. Not only is it self-defeating because maybe your goal was actually to get fit and this is counter to that goal. But in addition, it's still an hour delay. And so it's not as instant as it needs to be to pull you to the gym. So think about how can you add an element of temptation while you're pursuing the goal that might otherwise feel like a chore.
I kind of like that.
Yeah, maybe bundle exercise with listening to your favorite public media radio program,
like Studio
for instance.
Too.
Just
absolutely.
Put that out there. I don't know. Yeah.
Exactly. And so, I have quite a few friends who are telling me they have kids, they have a lot of responsibilities, and they have agreed to sort of do one thing this year for themselves. But there's a lot of guilt associated with that. And so, George, how do you sort of work your to keep your resolution? You're supposed to go to that dance class, have some mommy time, right? But then you talk yourself out of it because maybe one of your children needs something. How do you sort of work emotionally to make sure that you do and know that that self time is not necessarily selfish?
Yeah, a lot of times what I'm sharing with people is that it's okay to give yourself permission to do those things, and we struggle with that. We struggle with putting ourselves higher on the list. We put everyone and everything higher, and then we say if we do something, like you said, we feel guilty, but that takes the fun away. Right. If you go to that dance class, you're going to feel good. You're going to feel great. And then that feeling that you have will actually impact how you parent, how you show up in other places. But if you feel bad, if you feel miserable, if you don't go to that dance class, now you're moody and now you're giving the worst part of you to everybody else. So it actually serves you and others to enjoy and give yourself that permission to go experiment with whatever thing that you have on your list.
Mm. Yeah, I'm giving myself permission to have fun.
Absolutely.
There you go.
We give you permission, of course, to call this show, 888-477-9499. You could also email studio2@whyy.org. We want you to share your goal for the new year and your plan to make it stick. I mentioned I wanted to get an exercise bike.
People have been sharing. Yeah. They're telling you what these exercise bikes
Becky,
are.
Becky from Barnegat Light wishes me luck in that endeavor. Thank you, Becky, one of our regulars.
She found a bike for you.
Mary says, I'm running errands, came across a neighbor who was offering a very cool exercise bike for free in his driveway. He helped me load it into my car and brought it home at no cost, all benefit, met a neighbor, smiled, and that might be the best part. I need neighbors like that. I did find a guy on Facebook Marketplace who was giving one away for free, but he didn't pick me.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, well. It happens. I will find that bike. I will achieve this goal. I will temptation bundle, and I will encourage you.
He's manifesting it. I love it. Speak it into existence.
I will encourage you to stick with us on Studio 2. We're coming right back.
And welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. Resolutions, did you make any this new year? How's it going so far? Are you sticking to it? This hour, we're talking about why it's so hard to change our behavior and how to turn goals into habits that will last. With us is Wharton Professor Katie Milkman, who co-directs the Behavior Change for Good Initiative. She's also the author of How to Change. Also with us is George James, a therapist and CEO of George Talks and author of the new book, I Give Myself Permission.
And we want to hear from you. What are your goals this year for 2026? And what are your plans to make them stick? You can call 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. And if you're on YouTube or Facebook, you can drop a comment in the chat. And George, during the break, we were talking about what happens when folks don't make their goals. Like 80%. Of folks who make these New Year's resolutions don't achieve them. And so they come to you spilling their guts, Mr. Yeah. Therapist. Yeah. And so what happens to folks when they don't achieve?
Yeah, there's some people who are just like, it's just another day, another year, and they move on. But there's some people who take it in like scrolling on Instagram and you see everyone. They have a new house, then you have a new relationship. Everybody else is winning but you. Mm. And it adds to their negative self-talk. It adds to their lowness, their depression. And actually being able to help them say that, you know, it's okay. It's okay that you didn't meet this goal. Or pick another Monday, start again, right? So a lot of people take these resolutions and make it about who they are and personalize it that they didn't make it. And that's where they get to these really low places and oftentimes helping them to get out of that place and unstuck from that place.
Yeah, and that's why you got to follow some of the tools we're giving you today.
Yeah, absolutely. Katie from Wallingford said, my New Year's resolution coming into 2020, remember that year, was read more, worry less. Suffice it to say, 3 months later, I had a lot more time to read and a lot more to worry about, win some, lose some. Look, there is context to all this, right, George? Mm-hmm. Like, it's not like we're just pursuing these goals in a vacuum and life is always the same. Like, I would imagine some of your calculation has to come around, like, what else is changing in my life? How did that impact my ability to achieve those goals? And then, you know, you don't want to give yourself excuses, but you also want to, I think, be rational, right, about that there are complications, there are interventions that make these things more difficult to achieve.
I agree. And I think a lot of times people are just not kind to themselves.
Yeah.
You know, there's this thing about like you can motivate yourself by like beating yourself up and saying all these mean things. I just don't agree with that. Like, I think there are healthy, positive ways that you can say, look, this is my goal. Let me see if I can achieve it. And if it doesn't work out, maybe I can readjust and reevaluate and find other ways to get there. Listen to some of the things we've said today or find some other sources. But really, be kind to yourself, because maybe not today, but maybe next week.
Yeah.
You can get there with some time.
Yeah. And so, Katie, I want to give people, so there's obstacles that sort of like step in, are sort of in your path when you have these goals. And sort of, I want you to give us some of the most common ones so we can head them off and be ready to jump over those bad boys and make it to the finish line of our goals. So what are some obstacles that you see commonly and how do people overcome them?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, in my book, actually, I talk through 7 that I think are particularly common. One is just the motivation to get started. And actually, New Year's is one of the cures. So moments that feel like fresh starts. Yeah, exactly. We got it. Cure number one to getting started. We've got the launch platform ready. The second, we've talked about this a little already, is impulsivity. The fact that we care so much about instant gratification. And one of the best solutions to that is the fact that we also can make it fun to pursue our goals. So it can be instantly gratifying rather than something that requires delay of gratification. We can do this by only letting ourselves, for instance, listen to our favorite radio talk show like this one while we're exercising. Or, you know, doing it with a friend, which we talked about too, which builds both accountability and enjoyment. So that makes things more instantly gratifying when they're more social. Procrastination is kind of the flip side of
that's me right there.
Yeah.
That's me.
And we can We see ourselves in most of these, at least I do. I think most people have most of the problems, and it's a question of which one's going to be a real big sticking point, or which several will be a big sticking point in planning around them. When it comes to procrastination, deadlines can be helpful, and actually creating some penalty clauses for yourself so that there's consequences if you don't take action. There's some really cool websites that let you do this, like stick.com with an extra K and BeeMinder. I have no affiliation with these, but they're sites where you can create a contract and actually put money on the line to fine yourself if you don't achieve a goal by a certain date. And that can be a little extra motivation that we need to get moving, because, you know, we respond when others fine us, but we normally don't think of the idea of like penalizing ourselves. And that's an extreme version if you really need a kick in the pants. It actually has been proven that when we have a way to put money on the line, if we fail to follow through on quitting smoking, it can improve quit rates by about 30%. So this is a really powerful tool. Most of the things we've been talking about don't work for addiction, and this one even does. Okay, in addition to those, we have forgetting. If it's not top of mind, it's really hard to follow through. So for this, we need to set reminders, make detailed plans that actually have, you know, the moment when we're going to execute labeled on our calendar, and a, you know, a reminder that's going to trigger action. We've been talking a little bit with George about confidence, and that can be a barrier, right? If you don't believe in yourself, and it seems like, you know, there you can think about therapy with someone like George, who could be a helpful guide, but also there are some tools that you can use yourself. You can try to adopt more of a growth mindset, which is reminding yourself that you're a work in progress and that you can grow and improve at everything, as opposed to adopting a fixed mindset, which is more accept, you know, thinking of yourself as a finished product, and whatever missteps you make, you then interpret as information about your own quality or your own intelligence, right? So it turns out a growth mindset leads to better performance. And you can see exactly why. When we recognize that every aspect of our lives, we're just growing and learning, then when we have a misstep, instead of interpreting as diagnostic of our inability, we interpret it as something we can learn from and grow from. There's more.
That's a great start. Well, let me read a couple comments here. I thought this was interesting. Nick from Manahawkin says, I'm a 77-year-old carpenter. I want to lose 20-some pounds. And then David on YouTube says, at the beginning of 2026, I resolved to lose 20 pounds, only 30 more to go. Ha ha. I kept my New Year's resolution to save money. I stopped going to the gym after week one. It was interesting to me that they just both threw out the number 20 pounds. I don't, this question is totally out of left field, Katie, but do people tend to gravitate towards certain numerical goals? Like, do we have little mathematical biases in our mind that make us gravitate towards certain types of goals or certain numbers? And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, if indeed it's true.
Yeah, we've done some research on what's called quantification fixation, which is the tendency when there's a number associated with something to value it more, care more about it, even than, you know, if it gets 4 stars, or, you know, we can see in a bar graph exactly precisely how well rated this thing is. Numbers carry this extra weight in our minds. And so that can also be true for quantifying goals. We talked earlier about making it measurable so that you can see what progress you're making. And one way to make things measurable is to quantify them. So I would use numbers when setting goals whenever possible, because they attract that extra attention, that extra weight in your mind. And that's going to be helpful as you try to draw your attention toward that and away from the many distractions in life.
Yeah.
So I will say, and I told Avi this, and your wife is also very supportive. My husband is very supportive.
Yeah.
Like when I said I wanted to have a garden, when March 1st came, he was like, all right, you said you're going to have a garden.
Here's the mulch.
When are we going to get the dirt? You know, like it was like, when we getting the seeds, like let's make this thing happen. How can you be, George, the type of person, like you hear your spouse saying they want to do something, you hear your kids saying they have this goal, your mom or dad or best friend, like how do you become like that supportive person? Because I don't think I would have actually, like, you know, sometimes I used to say stuff, you know, like I'm like, hey, I'm going to be a gardener. Yeah, woohoo. But he was like, no, you said this, let's do it. And I did it, and now I'm in love. So how do you become that supportive partner or friend for somebody be a difference maker there?
I think there's some people who naturally will remember what their friend or partner or spouse wants to do and can kind of engage them. But some of us might need to put a note on our phone. Hey, so-and-so said they want to do this. Let me check in with them in 3 weeks. And actually make it like a reminder for you to check in with somebody else. Mm. And then also, you know that if your partner is happy, that might make you happy or might make your environment happy. So some of it is like, if you don't make that, if you don't do the garden and you feel bad about yourself, then I want to feel bad that you feel bad. So if I can help you, that makes all of us be in a good place.
Yeah.
So it works for all of us to really try to support the people around us and be connected to them in that way.
Yeah, I didn't realize how big of a difference that makes.
For sure.
When you have that supportive person, even just reminding, like you said, Katie, there's all these things like it, and a supportive partner or friend can keep you from procrastinating, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. One of the most important tools that we can use to achieve our goals is our social surroundings. And there's really cool research showing the person you're randomly assigned as a roommate in college actually affects your grades. If you get a more studious roommate, you're going to be a better student. And of course, it goes in the opposite direction too.
Yep.
And that kind of, right, we're all familiar with that, the bad influences, which by the way, can be one of the barriers to change.
Yes.
But this idea of actively seeking out people who can be partners to you on your journey, who can maybe even show you the way because they're a little further down the road, or who want to, you know, try to actually pursue goal in tandem. That's so valuable and important to your success. It can't be overstated.
And on that point, Aaron says, I've kept up with twice weekly weight training on our second year. The key is doing it with two friends. That creates fun, accountability, and some positive peer pressure. And by the way, Erin notes she's listening from her home office in Normal, Illinois, and
hey,
is
in
a Delaware Valley native. Thanks so much, Erin. This is sort of a big picture question, and maybe there's no real answer to it, Katie, but when is something a habit? Like, we talked about temptation bundling. Do I have to take those training wheels off for something to truly be a habit? Can I have those temptations bundled in there forever? How long do I have to be doing something before it truly is a habit? Is there any research to try to, like, actually, I don't know, quantify or even qualify what a habit is, Katie?
Yeah, I got to be involved in a team that did some research on how long it takes to form a habit using machine learning techniques and big data on gym attendees and also on hospital caregivers and how long it took them to form habits around cleaning their hands before they entered and exit patient rooms. So pretty different behaviors. And we were looking to see, is there a universal law? Like, how long before something sticks? And the short answer is, while there's lots and lots of misinformation out there about magic numbers of days it takes to form a habit, our research pretty clearly shows there is no magic number. Mm. It really differs for each of us. And it differs depending on the complexity of the habit and how often you repeat it. In the realm of forming habits around hand washing, it took order of magnitude weeks, whereas gym attendance habits took months to stabilize. Yeah. For a typical person. So I think what that means is, and this is very in line with what George has been saying, you need to be really giving yourself grace, not expecting these things to sort of start to feel automatic and like they're going to happen on autopilot overnight if you're trying to build healthy habits. And I absolutely advise continuing to use strategies even when you feel like, oh yeah, you know, I've been going to the gym four times a week for months now. It feels like a part of me and I've been temptation bundling the whole time. I'm binge watching my favorite TV show there. Don't just get sort of overconfident at that point and be like, well, I don't need to save TV for exercise routines and this is so automatic. No, keep doing what's working because if you start taking out elements of the plan that's been effective, that can lead the plan to crumble. So rely on these same tools because your human nature will be with you forever. You will always procrastinate. You will always prefer things that are instantly gratifying. So you don't want to take away the crutches that science has given you for building good habits.
Yeah. And so how do you sort of, because the thing about habits and New Year's resolutions and goals, sometimes you fall off, George. And I mean, you just got to give us the pep talk to getting back on the horse because you got to keep getting back, right?
You do. You got to keep giving yourself permission. You got to keep trying. And I think some of it is also that builds like confidence, as we were saying, that builds encouragement to say like, wow, you know what? I failed at that like five times. Like it took me like 4 years to actually go take the golf lesson, but then I did it and I felt really good about it. So like sometimes we keep doing it. And I really just also want to encourage people. Yes, the weight loss, think about your job, but also think about other things. Maybe you want to work on that friendship. Maybe you want to forgive that person that hurt you. Maybe you want to spend time with your child or grandchild. These are also good goals and resolutions to have. That's outside of the things that we always talk about.
Yeah, I like it.
Katie, feel free to say no to this question, but do you have a New Year's resolution that you could share with us? Are you working on formulating
one? Like
obviously,
to hear y'all's resolutions.
Obviously, this is a very busy time of year for Katie. I'm just going to put that out there. Spending a lot of time doing media hits and things like that. So giving some grace. But first of all, do you set one every year, Katie? And do you have one for this year?
I do. I will say, you know, I set them every year. I find them really useful. And my goal for this year is kind of a small one, but bite size can be good. So you're seeing me in my office here at Wharton. What you can't see is the stacks of papers on the other side of the room. It's a bit of a mess. So my goal for this year is I'm going to tidy up, actually, for the month of January. It's a very concrete goal. All of the old exams that I've been holding on to for the last decade for my former students, sorry, guys, they're going to the shredder. And I'm going to clean this office up so that I'm happier with the environment that I'm working in. It's very straightforward. And I highly recommend small bite-sized goals for people that you can actually accomplish during this period when you're feeling the extra motivation.
I love it. George, do you have one?
Yeah, I'm not a big resolution person, but I like to motivate myself. So yeah, being healthier is always on there. But what actually I've been paying attention to are the things that matter to me. And I love salsa. I love salsa dancing. And I realized that for a long time, I just haven't really been able to do it. My wife and I, our first dance was a salsa dance. And just the other day, we went to go see Buena Vista Social Club. And so it just keeps coming up for me. And I'm like, you know what? I've been talking about this. Why not really make the time and investment to kind of get back into it? And so I feel like that's emerging as one of my resolutions or goals as I just pay attention to myself and what I'm feeling.
Thanks also for dancing with us this hour, George James, CEO of George Talks, licensed therapist and author of I Give Myself Permission. A pleasure to talk to you today, George. And Katie Milkman, professor at the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania and co-director of the Behavior Change for Good Initiative, also author of How to Change, the Science of Getting from Where You Are to Where You Want to Be. Thanks for being with us, Katie.
Thanks for having me.
And the momentum is building.
Yes.
We're going to do. You're going to get that bike.
I'm getting the bike.
I'm going to add another day to my exercise during the week. We're going to get this done. And thank you, of course. We couldn't do anything of what we do without our producers, Debbie Builder, Andreas Copes, and Hazel Mae Bryan. So thank you. Thanks to Mike Schiffler, our visual producer, and to Al Banks and Tina Calliquet, who engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCory. From Studio 2 here at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. We resolve to talk to you tomorrow.
I love it.